Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. And you know what, Brian? It is nice to be back in the studio, but man, we had fun at the Ag PhD Winter Workshops.
Yeah, it was awesome. We every year put on a series of Ag PhD Winter Workshops. The last 3 days we've talked about tiling, weed, insect, and disease control. And then yesterday it was soils, and I got to talk to a lot of farmers over the last 3 days, had a lot of positive feedback, and especially with the soils clinic yesterday. I was talking to an agronomist this morning, and he goes, man, there are just so many questions that we get out of these things. And I said, yeah, we put out free information to people to really try to help farmers know their soils better, save money on fertilizer, increase yields, everything else. And we do have tremendous attendance, and we have a lot of people that are following things. But there are so many people yet that need more help with this. So we're trying to do everything we can for outreach, basically. And that's part of why we do Ag PhD Radio and Ag PhD TV and all these workshops, is just simply to help farmers. We don't charge anything for any of our stuff that we do. We just figure, hey, we've been super blessed as farmers and as agronomists, and we want to make sure that we're passing that good information on. So hopefully for the next generation of farmers, we've got things set up even better. And we did talk a lot over the last few days about the long-term impacts of all these decisions that you make today on your farm, whether it's tiling and making the decision to invest money in drain tile for your ground, or even just cleaning up your fields with weeds, insects, and diseases so it's better for the long run, or especially on the soil side of things. And I gave the example yesterday. I said, okay, let's just talk about this long-term thing, because so many farmers get hung up on, well, I spent X this year for fertilizer and it didn't quite pay. And I'm like, who cares? What we care about on ground you own is, how about the next 30 years? And I said, here's my firsthand example for you on your farm. Do you have a spot where grandpa used to haul manure 40, 50 years ago? I bet you can still find that spot today in terms of higher fertility levels, right? And I had a whole bunch of people in the audience shaking their head, yes, you can. It just proves my point that, hey, if you put fertilizer out there, it doesn't just disappear tomorrow. Now, sure, nitrogen is going to be gone the next year, at least most of it. But most nutrients, like take phosphorus, potassium, copper, zinc. I mean, there's so many nutrients you can put out there. They're going to be there for years and years and years and years and decades and maybe even centuries. So we got to look at, what are we doing for our soil that can help us in the long term? And again, it comes back to, do you own the ground or are you renting the ground? If you're renting the ground, then we want to do a lot of banding, foliar feeding, everything we can to just feed the crop and leave as little behind as possible. Not that we're trying to mistreat the soil or anything, but if you don't know if you're going to have the ground next year, the last thing you want to do is spend $150 and have 80 of those dollars be left for the next farmer.
Yeah, I totally agree. A lot of questions around this, and boy, it was really fun to see how many younger farmers were present as well that are certainly looking at 30, 40, maybe more, maybe longer run. Got a number of questions, though, Brian, we couldn't get to. Like to take a couple of those right now. Do you know if you want to jump into the Ag PhD mailbag?
It's the mailbag!
All right, Brian, one of the conversations we had is about phosphorus and making sure you have enough zinc if you're building up phosphorus levels and so forth. Caleb in Wisconsin said, I was watching your soils clinic at home today. Want to apply some phosphorus to get our phosphorus to zinc ratio in check. Can you please explain how many pounds of product is needed to adjust parts per million when it comes to phosphorus? The phosphorus phosphate discussion can be confusing.
Yeah, it can. And so one of the things that we always try to do at Ag PhD is simplify things. And this goes back to something that our dad talked to us about when we were kids. And I know he told me this a bunch of times. He's like, Brian, just make sure that you state everything at like an eighth grade level. Not that farmers are not smart. Farmers are very smart, but the whole thing is everybody's busy, and you got to keep things simple, easy, straightforward, so you can understand it immediately. Not, oh, I got to sit through a 401 level, class with some professor who's this absolute brainiac, and I got to decipher this and that and everything else. Just keep it simple. So that's what we're going to tell you on phosphorus or any of these nutrients. If you want to change parts per million, it's super simple. In the soil, all you have to do is you multiply parts per million times 2. That gives you pounds per acre. Okay, so if you want to change the parts per million, let's call it 20 parts per million. Well, you multiply that times 2, that's 40 pounds per acre. All right, and then you look at, okay, what's my active ingredient? What's my percentage? Let's take MAP, 11520, and just for easy figuring, we'll call it 50% phosphate, okay? So if I want to go 50% phosphate, then I would just simply divide, if I'm trying to increase parts per million of phosphate by 40 pounds, then I divide by 50%, and I would need to get 80 pounds out there of MAP. Now, the only thing that I would challenge you with is your lab might give you readings in phosphorus instead of phosphate, okay? And that might make it confusing for you. So just understand the conversion from phosphorus to phosphate is phosphorus times 2.3 gives you phosphate, okay? So here's where I'm going with this. If you say, all right, I want to increase by 10 parts per million of phosphorus, that means you need to increase by 23 parts per million on phosphate. Okay, so just so we're all talking the same language here, MAP, you're figuring phosphate there. Phosphorus could be on the soil test. Phosphate could be in the soil test. I don't know what your soil test says, but that's what you need to do for a conversion. So if you have a very specific question on that, send us your soil test. More than happy to take a look at that. It's actually pretty easy. Just break it down, multiply things out. You certainly can figure it out, or we can absolutely help you as well.
Thanks for the question, Caleb. We really appreciate it. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions after this.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm in the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. It is a Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and questions all throughout the show. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also email us radio at agphd.com. Let's head to the phone lines. We'll start off in Illinois. We've got Doug with us right now. Doug, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. You getting fired up for spring, or are you still trying to get rid of some snow?
No, actually, we haven't had a lot of snow here. I'm in the southeastern part of the state. We've had a substantial amount of rain, but we have missed the white stuff for the most part.
Excellent. Excellent. So how are you sitting going into the spring then? Are you in a better spot than you were in 2019?
I think so. Our soil moisture is adequate. We're not quite as excessive as we were in 19 now that, of course, we've still got 60 days to planting season here. So that could all change in a heartbeat. But I think things are looking pretty good going into 20. Everybody's kind of revved up and ready to put 2019 behind them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's one of those years that I think we'll be talking about for a long, long time because, wow, it was certainly a tough one. How about in your area now with the crops that we're in? We saw a lot more disease problems across much of the upper Midwest. How did you fare in southeast Illinois?
We actually were fairly fortunate. We didn't have a lot of disease problems. We had a little bit of anthracnose showed up a little higher than normal in corn. Soybean diseases, really foliar diseases, and pod and stem blights didn't seem to be all that bad, especially considering the amount of moisture that we had during the rainfall was because I think we finished up the growing season about 15 inches above our normal rainfall for the year.
Okay, 15 inches over normal. How about in the fall? Did you end up wet, or were you able to get out in the field and get some field work done?
Very little tillage work done down here. We were wet pretty much all the way through the fall. That carried through all the way into mid-December. Most of the crop did get finished up as far as getting it out of the field, as far as harvest goes, around Thanksgiving to the first part of December, about everyone was finished up. But there was very little fall tillage work done, very little fall fertilization work done.
So what does that mean for spring seed bed prep? What kind of tools will you utilize on the farm?
Well, I think we will be looking at a higher degree of no-till and mulch-till. We have outfitted both the planters that I run in my operation with row cleaners, and I think we're going to try to put – we didn't really tear the ground up as far as rutting it up last fall, getting the crop out. So I think we're going to look at a lot more no-till and very minimum-till situations in putting the crop in the ground. Of course, we'll have a lot of fertilizer application to do, anhydrous application, things like that beforehand.
Yeah, I was just talking to some growers from eastern Iowa yesterday. They were saying the exact same things of, hey, what do you think about us no-tilling in some of this stuff? We didn't make a big mess out there. And they were talking about row cleaners as well. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how we adjust. How about with the fertility? What are you doing since you couldn't get the fall fertility on in all cases? Does that mean more with the planter, or how do you guys do it?
We do quite well. We do it in kind of a double shot. We do use a dry mix a VRT spread dry mix that goes down in front of the planter. Also using a 2x2 placement on a starter fertilizer, kind of a pop-up starter.
Sure.
And so we're kind of using a twofold, and then anhydrous. We're too far south to put our anhydrous on in the fall, so we normally have to do either spring or side dress applications, and we're split. Hopefully right now, if weather permits, we'll do probably about 70-75% of it will go on as pre-plant anhydrous with a denitrification inhibitor of some sort in that, and then probably about 25-30% will come in side dress.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's going to be a fun spring. I'm really hoping that this warm-up continues. Now, it's hard to say warm-up in January, but we are above normal, so we'll take whatever we can get at this point. Doug, good luck to you guys in southeast Illinois. Hope things work out well going into this spring.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate it. We're looking forward to it.
You bet. Yeah, everybody's ready to move on from 2019 for sure. Thanks, Doug. Let's head down to Iowa. We've got Evan with us right now. Evan, how are you today?
Oh, good, good. I guess I'd do 2019 again. It was a good year for us. actually. So.
See, you're one of the first ones, Evan. Most people are saying, oh, man, glad that's in the books. But you know what? We had a world record corn yield set. We had a world record soybean yield set. There were some good crops in areas for sure, no doubt about it. So how are you sitting going into the spring? Were you able to get field work done and so forth in the fall to set yourself up for an early spring?
Yeah, yep. All field work's done, so.
Outstanding. You know, there was a lot of conditions in 2019 that were tough, like, for example, cloudy weather and overcast skies, those kinds of things. If you missed the rain, maybe it didn't keep you out of the field, but did you notice anything in terms of test weight or any other things, moisture in the fall, that you'd say, okay, that was maybe a little bit too much of a challenge?
No, previous year was a lot worse in the fall. Test weight was good. You know, when you walk fields, it seems like you see stuff, but when you look at the grain sample in the combine or whatever, the truck, it still looks clean. So
outstanding. I mean, well, what
you can always find stuff when you're walking, but
sure. Well, what do you think played into your success in 2019? What were some of the things that you did that you said, man, that was the right move?
Tough to say. We changed a lot. So we added sulfur. We'd never applied sulfur in our dry before. So we did that. We switched to Xtend soybeans from the Roundup Readies. We got a new planter. So we switched to 15-inch rows instead of 30s. Got a bigger planter so we could drive slower. And we had airbag downforce instead of springs. We planted all racehorse type varieties in corn. So it's tough to pinpoint it. We're going to try a lot of the same things next year and see what changes, if anything changes. And but it was challenging. I mean, 2019 wasn't easy, but I'd do it again. We got pretty lucky. We worked hard when the conditions were good, and that ended up paying off. We didn't realize how big of a deal that'd be until spring was over, but LED lights on the tractor got us able to work real late in the night and got stuff done. So
outstanding. Hey, tell me about the Xtend soybeans. Did you spray the dicamba? How did you manage them?
Yeah, we used a dicamba. It worked really, really well. There was one small field that was embarrassingly bad with weeds. That was one that couldn't get into right away, but I mean, it just smoked everything. It was not an issue at all. I don't want to incriminate myself, but I did some things that I probably shouldn't have and did it, made sure the wind was right, the timing was right.
You bet.
You know, humidity was right, and we still got away with it. No big deal.
Do you think
right next to some of our alfalfa, and it was fine too.
Awesome. Do you think the 15-inch rows helped you too with a little quicker canopy to stop some of those late flushes?
Yeah, I don't know how it couldn't have. Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking to some growers just yesterday, too, that had done that, and they said, man, it's going to be really hard to give up the 15-inch rows after what we saw last year with weed control. And I know for us with the 30-inch rows, we were wondering about the canopy when it was a little cooler here. It took us a little longer this year, but the residual herbicide sure helped us out as well. But, yeah, it's fun to talk to growers. There were a lot of growers that didn't get dicamba sprayed on their Xtend beans last year. We're getting a lot of questions from growers saying, man, I wonder how it worked for everybody else because we didn't get ours on just with rainfall and whatnot, couldn't get back in the field. You mentioned the one field that got a little ugly on you. We had a little hairy field, too, and and we were really happy the weed control actually turned out okay.
Yeah, we had even had tar spot come in late this year too. I think it came in late enough that it didn't affect us, but State Extension Agronomist was poking around and she asked to look at our field, so she did, and she found it basically everywhere that she went in every county that she was responsible for. So I think it's probably here and probably here to stay. So
yeah, that's a good point. We'll have to be talking a lot more about that across much of Iowa. And sure, the weather conditions the last couple of years, it could have moved even further than that. And I just wonder how many fields were affected that people just weren't out looking at. Evan, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck heading into this spring. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contan's WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contan's this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contan's white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
You know a healthy crop is required for your best results. Simply put, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products to deliver those results. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you with your fertility decisions. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
White mold and sudden death syndrome are two of the most important fungal diseases in soybean production today. But did you know 40 to 50 million acres in the north central region are affected annually? When every season has different disease challenges, the question becomes, how can you ensure the best start for your soybeans no matter what? The answer is Heads Up Seed Treatment. Trusted by growers across the Midwest, Heads Up offers a new mode of action to prime your beans to help fight fungal disease. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. We'd love to hear from you today. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Let's head up to Ontario, Canada. Get our friend Michael along with us today. Michael, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Not too bad. So how did harvest go in Ontario? Is everything out of the field, or are you guys still fighting a little bit?
No, we managed to get everything out of the field. It's a record how late we finished out, but we managed to get it out.
You know, one thing we ran into is wet crop. Our soybeans came out wetter than they ever have. Our corn came out wetter than it ever had. But we were happy and thankful that we got it out. How about for you? And what happens with corn that's a little wet or soybeans that are a little wet? Are you using air to dry them? Do you have heated drying? Or do you just haul it right to an outlet where somebody's going to buy it from you?
For the soybeans, we were lucky enough to be able to harvest everything in the window where it was actually quite nice. So the moisture this year was fine. We didn't have to dry anything. The corn, on the other hand, we got the deadly frost around the 4th of October. And so the quality was really low, and it didn't dry from then on. Like, we never seen that before. It was pretty much between 30% and 40%, and all the way till January it stayed around that point. It just would not want to dry in the field whatsoever.
How about for some of the other crops like potatoes? What was 2019 like for those growers? And are you raising some potatoes too?
Yeah, we are. The potatoes, more and more what we're trying to do is put potatoes where the land, everything is really balanced out and there's irrigation. In the past, we do maybe 60% under irrigation and some of it in other fields, but now we're really... we're not taking the risk anymore. So because it was really dry with the irrigation, the potatoes were actually pretty good. So that ended up working out.
Excellent. Excellent. So what's the game plan going into the spring? Did you have, I'm assuming with that late harvest, you still got some field work to do, fertility work to do?
Yeah, for sure. The field work thing, just like everybody else, is going to be the big challenge. So like many others we've heard, we're pulling out some disc out of the end of the shed to try to do some heavier spring work. And that's going to be the big challenge is we like to work our ground to get things to warm up around here. And when it's not plowed or chiseled whatsoever, it takes a little bit longer. So that's going to be a challenge for sure.
Well, Michael, good luck to you heading into this spring. I know it was a tough and long harvest season, but hopefully this spring will warm up and things will go better than you think.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for. If it's dry, nice and early, then maybe everything's going to line up for next season to be okay.
I sure hope so. You know, a lot of times things average out. 2019 was a little tougher year. Maybe 2020 will go a little better. Thanks for calling, Michael. Really appreciate it. Let's head up to Michigan. We've got Gordon on with us right now with a couple questions. Gordon, how are you doing?
Doing good, Darren. Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I got two questions. The first one is, I know you guys have typically recommended about, the soil holding capacity for nitrogen is like 10 units of nitrogen for every one CEC. And I'm wondering if that recommendation is different of broadcasting nitrogen versus banding nitrogen, if there would be a difference. And then the second question is whether you have any experience or knowledge if it's okay to run treated corn seed through a seed treater a second time to add some additional products.
Okay, both great questions. Let's start with the last one you brought up in terms of seed treating. That one's pretty easy. Yes, absolutely, you can over-treat seed. Now, we get concerned about it, so we would worry that you may get the seed too wet and it could actually start to germinate there. So I would be a little bit concerned, but we've done a whole bunch of that ourselves and with a lot of customers over the years that we have worked with, just a lot of farmers, I should say, around the country. I would prefer that we treat it fairly close to when we're actually going to or over-treat it fairly close to when we're actually going to put it in the field, but it's no real big deal. We've done some in the middle of the wintertime even. So, yes, you can do that. You just have to be really careful with the seed, though. Corn seed is, right. and soybean seed, I mean, they're delicate. So we just don't want to be cracking them up, damaging them, but it can be done. Okay, in terms of the CEC thing, no, we don't really typically talk much difference in terms of band versus broadcast. Now, theoretically, yes, there is going to be some difference if you band it. And I mean, it would be and should be more possible that it could move down deeper because you've placed it in one concentrated band. But let's face it, most people aren't putting that real deep. And nitrogen does move around in water in the soil. It's fairly mobile in that soil. It actually can even move upward when you have capillary action moving water upwards. So I don't get all that worried about it, but you know, if you're concerned about it, instead of let's say you had a 20 CEC and you go, okay, my soil could hold a grand total of a couple hundred pounds and it's already got 50 there, I'm going to apply 150, maybe apply 130 or 140 if it's in a band. I just won't get too worried about it. I don't think you're going to see hardly any difference at all. So no big worries. I think you'll be just fine.
All right. Well, yeah, answered my questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Yeah. Thanks for the call. Yeah, in terms of the band versus broadcast thing, we were talking about that a little bit earlier in the show. Where we commonly see the biggest gains for banding, because I said nitrogen can move around pretty well in the soil no matter what, but where we see the biggest gains for banding is phosphorus, potassium, zinc, copper, the very immobile nutrients, the ones that aren't moving around a whole lot with soil water. What we're trying to basically accomplish there is we want to make sure that our roots run into wherever we've put that fertilizer. When you broadcast, your roots are not just going to run into them. They aren't necessarily going to find them. And there's potentially a high percentage of your P and K, copper, zinc, that will be sitting out there the following year. And again, it's no real big deal if you got good overall fertility, your plant has enough, and you own the ground, who cares? You can use it up next year or 5 years from now or 20 years from now, no big deal. But when you rent ground, that's where we get worried. All right, Darren, let's go ahead with the next question.
Okay, got a couple of questions here. It's from Rick up in Alberta. And Rick said, I attended your soils clinic you had in Lethbridge and got a chance to talk to Brian ahead of the meeting, but I didn't get to catch him after with a couple questions here. He said, so two questions. First of all, according to everything I've read and heard thus far, when pH is above 7, there shouldn't really be any exchangeable hydrogen. Yet in this first sample, the pH is above 7, and there's still 8.8% hydrogen. I'm wondering if there's something I missed. And then the second sample, I've got calcium at 81.
I don't understand it either.
And calcium 81% base saturation, okay. Magnesium at 15. How difficult will it be to build potassium levels with potash?
Okay. So first of all, on his question on the hydrogen, yeah, above 7, there should not be hydrogen there. I don't know why that there is. When you look at most labs, you will not see any hydrogen percent, but it's all still relative. So what I'm getting at here is in the base saturation, that is simply a ratio of one nutrient to the rest of these nutrients. And when I look at on that particular test, you had 3.1% K, you had 18.7% magnesium, and 69% calcium. You're actually pretty good. I mean, I don't have a big issue with any of that stuff. You might want to bump the potassium a little bit. That'd be about it. Okay, now on the other question, when you get high calcium levels, like your 81% and 15% mag, yeah, just put potash or something else out there, I mean, some other potassium source, you can absolutely build it. It just requires a lot more when you're building, when you have a high cation exchange capacity. When you have a low cation exchange capacity, it's a lot easier and costs a lot less. Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
We know balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid has the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop, plus the expertise to give you a recommendation based on your soils, your fields, and your goals. AgriLiquid has the phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrient products necessary to deliver the best results from a solid fertility program. Visit AgriLiquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
The Grain Depth Guard from FarmShop MFG has helped farmers keep their bushels safe from spoilage and shrinkage loss in bins all across the country. And this low-cost solution just became even more affordable. FarmShop MFG is offering a $100 factory rebate on all Grain Depth Guard bin monitoring systems. This offer is available for a limited time only, so take advantage of this program now to upgrade your bins and protect your crop investments. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
Now that harvest is in the books, it's time to start thinking about your plan for the next crop. Using a pre-emerge herbicide in your soybeans is the best agronomic choice you can make to ensure control of tough weeds and grasses before they wreck the rest of your season. Authority brand herbicides from FMC keep your soybean fields clean from the start. Research trials have shown that applying a pre-emerge herbicide at planting can preserve up to 20 bushels or more of yield potential. With multiple options to fit your soil types, tillage practices, and weed management needs, Authority brand herbicides deliver the pre-emerge power to fight glyphosate-resistant weeds before they take root. How do they do it? Two modes of action keep resistance in check. Rule your fields with dual modes of action. It's not too late. Visit your FMC retailer or FMCAgUS.com to learn more. Always read and follow label directions, restrictions, and precautions for use.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. It's Farmer Friday, and we're taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head out to Ohio. We got Chuck with us right now. Chuck, how you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. How about you?
Well, pretty good. Anytime I talk to somebody from Ohio, in 2019, it was kind of a risky thing because they might be in a really bad area for weather. How did you turn out in 2019?
Well, not as bad as I was expecting. We're in southern Ohio, so we didn't get quite the monsoons that they did in northwestern Ohio, but nevertheless, it was a wet and frustrating spring and early summer.
Hey, Chuck, this is Brian. My question for you is, what's kind of the outlook now going into this year? Like in your area, does it look like it might be more corn acres, or what are you kind of thinking today?
Yeah, sure. Well, personally, because of the size of my fields and the rotation I'm in, I'm probably going to end up with a little more corn next year than beans than I had this past couple years. But I can't speak for everyone else. I'd say they'll be about the same. Beans are more popular down here.
So why are beans more popular down there?
Well, I guess we can get them in a little later.
Yep.
With fewer trips to the mill, I guess.
So what else is kind of top of mind for you here as we start 2020? Anything that you're going to be changing up on your farm this year?
Well, I've been listening to you guys, and I've been installing drainage like crazy, and it is paying off by gangbusters.
Awesome.
One of the things I've noticed, though, on a couple of fields is after I put the drainage in, my pH drops.
Yep.
Now I kind of expected that a little bit, but now I'm to the point where I've got to start putting lime out.
Sure.
And I couldn't do it this fall. It turned wet before I can get trucks on a field. And I don't know if they'll be able to even get any in the spring. So I'm going to be have to use Pell Lime to get the calcium that I need.
Okay.
My question to you is longevity of Pell Lime. If I, you know, spend the money and put the Pell Lime out that I need, in some cases 2,000 pounds to the acre, and I realize it'll neutralize the soil pretty quick because it, you know, it's pretty soluble.
Yeah.
But will it be gone in a year or two, and I'm going to have to do it again, or am I still going to have to put limestone on it?
Well, one of the things we talk about all the time is if your soil pH is dropping, or if your soil pH is rising on the other end of things, we have to ask ourselves, why is this happening? So what I would start looking at is, what am I doing for nitrogen? And is there a way that I can maybe split apply my nitrogen? Is it possible you could be cutting nitrogen in some cases? Because a lot of times what we find is excess nitrogen can drive pH down fairly quickly. Now, if it's going down really, really slow, you know, I can't say I'm tremendously worried about it because let's face it, nobody's going to do a perfect job of nitrogen. I don't care who you are. But I mean, that's what I would say. So to answer that question, what I'm getting at is if you get your pH in the right range, hopefully it's going to stay there for many years if you manage your nitrogen well. If you end up with, I was planning on a 250 bushel crop, and it only ended up to be 150. Well, guess what happens to that extra nitrogen? It will turn to nitric acid. It'll strip calcium out of the soil, and you're going to drop your pH fairly quickly. So that's probably right. The number one thing that I would tell you. I would say I am slightly concerned when you tell me Pell Lime. A lot of times guys are talking to me about 300 pounds, 500 pounds, something like that. And if you're telling me 2,000 pounds, yeah, that sounds like a fairly good size bill to me. So hopefully you're not spending crazy amounts of money on that. Because I mean, if you've got low pH, you definitely want to get some lime out there. But we got to try to do it for as little money as possible. Always, right?
Right. Well, the pH is 5.7, and it's pretty light soil, 3.2 CEC.
Okay.
So. My concern is, you know, will the Pell Lime, being as soluble as it is, will it leach away now that I've got the tile in the system and I'll be back to square one?
No, it's not. Calcium is not super leachable in soil, but like I say, you know, when we have excess nitrogen, or there are certain things that can strip that out of there. So we want to try to take a look at the entire soil test and say, all right, let's try to get our nutrients in balance. And usually what we find is we don't have a big change in terms of that pH long term. But I will tell you this, when you're only at a 5.7 pH and you have very light soil, it usually only takes a splash of lime and you got her up into the 6.3, 6.5 range. So, I mean, and I don't know, I haven't seen any of your data, anything, I'm just going by what you're telling me here, but it just, when you say 2,000 pounds of Pell Lime, that sounds like a lot for a low CEC, and already you're at a 5.7 pH. Now, if you were at a 4.2 pH, I would say, oh, okay, now I get it. But when you're at 5.7, you're actually fairly close to where you need to be.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Well, that's 2,000 pounds of dolomitic limestone is what they're talking about. So what, I don't know what the equivalent that'll be. It'll be somewhat less.
Okay, yeah. Yep, for sure. So with dolomitic lime, too, the nice thing is with your very light soil, getting a little extra magnesium out there in many cases can be good. I mean, we can sure look at your soil tests if you want us to, but a lot of times for the guys with light soil, they want more magnesium, which kind of tightens that soil up, helps you hold a little more moisture, and helps overcome the fact that you have a lot of sand out there. So anyway, hopefully that helps you out.
Very good. I appreciate it. My magnesium is low. I'm looking at the soil test right here. It's only at 98 parts per million, and they're recommending 130 to 270.
Exactly.
So that makes sense.
Yep. There you go. Okay. Well, hey, thanks for calling in today, Chuck. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks. Keep up the good work.
Yep. Thanks a lot. Have a great day. All right. Let's get back to the Ag PhD mailbag there, Darren. What else you got for us?
Well, I get kind of an interesting one. And this one comes from Todd. Anthony. This comes from Anthony in Minnesota. And he ran some irrigation water tests. And I just started looking through what some of the levels were. And it kind of raised some concern for me because he was wondering, well, what do you think of this test? And I noticed that he didn't have iron on the test. He didn't have electrical conductivity, and those are things that I would normally see on a water test. But he did have a few things that stood out. And his pH is above 7 on every one of the tests. And that got me thinking, you know, when the water pH is above 7 and you're going to put millions of gallons out onto your field.
How much above 7?
Well, 7.4, 7.5, 7.7, 7.5, and 7.6.
Where's he at?
Minnesota, central okay. Minnesota.
Okay, and the reason why I ask that
heavy,
is a lot of
heavy ground.
Okay, yeah. See, a lot of times we end up with people like Chuck, where he's dealing with lighter soil and irrigation potentially, and then we have a lot of risk for that pH to continue dropping. So anything that boosts the pH even slightly, that a lot of times is a good thing, not a bad thing. So I just wanted to find out where we're at.
Okay. The other thing. Well, there's several things. Okay, first of all, if you're doing irrigation, for anyone listening today, run water tests. See what kind of quality you have for water. So his pH is above 7. Manganese. He's got some manganese levels that are 3 times the drinking water standard. Now, we need manganese in crop production.
No big deal. Manganese is somewhat leachable. You're going to be fine.
Calcium, his calcium levels are not bad. Half of what the limit is. Nitrogen is really
Wait,
low.
You're looking at the legal limit for
drinking water. Not on the calcium. I'm looking at the for irrigation. If you have 150 parts per million, it gets to be a problem. He's at 70 or maybe 80 at the worst. So they just worry a lot about calcification on those nozzles and so forth when that calcium level gets high. So there is some calcium in there, and you'll probably see that, but it doesn't appear to be the hardest water or anything like that.
Do we have a soil test with this?
No.
Okay, that's what I'd really like to see, because has he been irrigating for a while, or don't you know that either?
Nope, I don't know that answer.
All right.
Said, we have a few tests from Center Pivot Irrigation, just wondering if you would look at them and if you're concerned about any of them. You know, the one that really concerns me, I guess the pH is one you'll have to manage around, but the one that really concerns me is you've got arsenic in some of these, and some it's as low as 2 micrograms per liter, and some it's 20. That I don't know enough about arsenic in water, but that scares me.
All right, we'll talk about it right after this. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With 2 effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstoss.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic herbicides from Atticus LLC. Tough broadleaf weeds are a hassle, but they're no match for Cavallo from Atticus. Cavallo delivers fast, contact, and residual control so your corn, soybean, and sorghum crops can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. We are live in the Morton studio today on a Farmer Friday. If you'd like to call into the show, got a little bit of time left here, 844-44-AG-PHD. So right before the break, Darren mentioned arsenic in the water. Sounds terrible, right? And don't get me wrong, I don't want a whole bunch of arsenic in my water, certainly if I'm going to be drinking it. But if we're putting it out there for irrigation, I just want to tell you what the EPA limits are for how much arsenic you could apply to a field safely. Now, this is in soil pHs 6.5 and above. 1.8 pounds per year. Okay, so you might say, well, how do I calculate this? How do I even figure this out? All right, here's how you can do it. Let's just say, for example, that you're putting 20 gallons of water out there, 20 inches of water out there. Now, odds are for irrigation, you're not going to be putting that much out in Minnesota, but I'm just figuring very worst case scenario, 20 inches, okay? An acre inch of water, Darren, correct me if I'm wrong, 27,154, sound right? Okay, so I multiply that out, that would be 543,000 gallons on a per acre basis. Okay, then I multiply that times water weighs, I believe it's 8.33, sound right? Okay, so I multiply 8.33 times the 543,000. So that gives me 4.5 million pounds of water. Okay, with this, I know that the level that he's got on here is 0.01 parts per million. So if I figure 0.01 parts per million, well, I better figure out how many millions I've got to begin with. So I've got 4.5 million gallons. So I take the 4.5 times the 0.01. If I've run the math right, which hopefully I have, that means I've got 0.05 in terms of pounds. Okay, so that's 1/20 of a pound I'm putting out there, and the EPA legal limit is 1.8 pounds. So to me, that doesn't throw up any real big red flag. I don't think we're going to be having any problems. The level is just really, really, really low. One of the things that we've always talked about is the dose makes the poison. If you've got enough of a dose of anything, heck, even water will kill you. So we always have to take a look at what's our dose. And to me, it looks like our dose is awfully, awfully low on the arsenic.
All right. Very good. Thanks for the question, Anthony. Really appreciate that. Got one from Carrie who says, is inoculant worth the money on soybean seed? We're going into some prevent plant acres. We're expecting low prices, potentially not the greatest yield in those prevent plant acres.
Stop right there. We're expecting low prices. Okay, right now, can't you contract beans in the fall for at least $8? Okay, to me, $8 is not a low price. $4 is a low price. $3 is a low price. Even $5, that's a low price. But, you know, we've been farming for, let's put it this way. I've been a full-time agronomist for 30 years, okay? And we've seen dramatically lower prices than this. And inoculant prices really haven't changed. So the point is, you got a better chance for a return on investment today than you did back when bean prices were $5 or $6 or less. So I would argue with, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I want $8 beans. I'd love to have $12 or $15 soybean prices. But all I'm getting at is if $8 is your argument, then no way. So I'd say beans have to be $1 or $2 a bushel before I'm not putting inoculant on. Inoculant absolutely pays. Put it out there. Now, make sure you get a decent inoculant and treat it right so the bacteria don't die first. But there's no reason why inoculant shouldn't pay for you. It only costs $1 or $2 an acre.
All right. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. Got one from Trent in Southwest Missouri. He said, I've got a starter fertilizer set up on my planter that puts liquid on top of the ground behind the closing wheel. So it's a 0x2 placement. Was wondering, what is my best option for starter in no-till corn? So he's going to leave it on top of the ground.
Okay, well, if I'm going to leave it on top of the ground, the only thing I'm going to put out there is leachable nutrients, nitrate, sulfate, boron, that's it. Most likely, he's thinking he's going to put phosphorus out there. There's no way I'm putting phosphorus in the soil surface. No way. Our soil surface is already loaded up. And I'll challenge you to do this. Test your top one inch of soil. I'll bet you're going to find your phosphorus levels are fantastic right now. So why would you put more where you already have a whole slug of phosphorus today? And when you have any erosion, wind, rain, anything, that's the stuff you lose. Plus, even if your phosphorus goes into the ground a little bit, there's no way it's going in even an inch. It might go in a quarter inch or half inch, maybe if you're super lucky. How many roots do you have right there? The vast majority of roots you're going to find in a cornfield are in the 4 to 7, 4 to 8 inch range. Okay, so ideally, for the best placement to use it up this year and get the most response from it, I'd like to get that phosphorus down in the ground a little bit. So preferably, That's why, I mean, that's where do you think the 2x2 thing came from? Now you're getting your phosphorus down, hopefully, 4 inches deep in the ground. That would be great. But putting phosphorus on the soil surface, no way. Potassium, if you had really light soil, irrigation, and lots of rain, could you put potassium on the soil surface? Sure you could. But I'm not a fan of this. I don't know why you would do this. You're going to spend the same money, but you're not going to get the same response as somebody who puts it in the ground. All right, let's go to the next one, Darren.
All right, Brian, I got some soil tests, and I also have a test from some chicken litter.
Let me come back to this last one, too. And let me just apologize also. And if you listen to the radio show on a regular basis, you know that I mean well, but I'm going to be super, super blunt. And I'm not just going to come right out usually and say, well, that's not a great idea. But I will tell you exactly how I feel about things and what I would do on my farm. I was just working with a guy this morning that was going to do something, and I go, why would you do that? I can save – I mean, you can do it for $60,000 on your farm less and have a better program and have less carryover. And it's just some of these things I go, yeah, you can do what you're talking about, but why? If it's going to cost you more, you're not going to get the same response, and now you got a lot more risk, I just wouldn't do it. So anyway, again, I apologize. I'm a little bit blunt, but I think you'd rather have it that way than me sugarcoating things. All right, go ahead, Darren.
All right. So this one's from Jeremy in central Minnesota, and he said, just give you a little bit of background. We average about 30 to 35 inches of rain in a normal year. No irrigation, so it's all dry land, and this is conventional till.
Got it.
I picked up some new ground, and I know it doesn't look good, so I sent you the one-acre grids. Here's what I've done so far. I spread about 2 tons of beet lime to address the pH.
Okay.
I got some tile in the ground last fall.
Great.
And he said, what I'm planning on doing is spreading 4 tons per acre of chicken litter this spring and for the next few years to try to build my ground up. My target is 100 parts per million of P2 and 6% base saturation K.
Great.
Now, I'd love to go more manure at one time, but I'm worried about too much salt.
Right.
So I included a manure test for you to look at. So here's my questions. He said, first question, if I get around 180 pounds of pea from the 4 tons of manure, can I spread 18 pounds per acre of actual zinc as well to try to build them up together at a ratio of 10 to 1?
I wouldn't get that carried away because here's what I think you're forgetting. The phosphorus needs of the plant are tremendous. The zinc needs are very small in terms of what the grain's going to take out. What we talk about isn't so much applying the P to zinc at a 10 to 1 ratio. What we talk about is having the soil with a P to zinc at a 10 to 1 ratio. So I'm not that concerned about it. There's no way I'm putting 18 pounds of zinc. Well, we've done it, actually, and it's been fine. But I don't encourage you to put 18 pounds of zinc out in one
shot. It's also as you're adjusting pH. It's interesting that you'll see more nutrients show up on your soil test sometimes.
Yeah, but
I think I'd take things one at a time and not get too carried away of doing everything at once.
Yeah, but what you said there, Darren, I'm not gonna agree with you in this particular instance is because he's got a low pH and a lot of the micronutrients show up better in a little low pH soil. When he raises it to 6.5, he might actually see slightly less for availability of a couple of these micros, like manganese would be a good example. But I'm not going to put near that much zinc on. I am going to put some zinc on. Don't get yourself too carried away. And, you know, you also have to consider, hey, we're low on boron, we're low on copper, we're low on manganese, we're definitely low on sulfur. Hopefully that chicken litter has a bunch of that stuff. And, yeah, I apologize. Darren just handed me the stuff a few minutes ago, so I haven't had time to really analyze it, but you've got a bunch of those nutrients in that chicken litter. So I have a feeling the zinc's going to be building up at the same time the phosphorus is based on this litter test.
Hey, thanks for the question, Jeremy. We'll get to your other questions on another show. Thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.